Hey, I'm Heather, a chaos coordinator and mom of three young kids. Chaos and cookies is literally my life, with never-ending dishes, laundry, you name it. Being a mom is a blessing, but it also comes with hard days too. Together, we can find the humor and real solutions to lighten your load and clean up the crumbs. You're listening to the Chaos and Cookies Podcast. Welcome back to another episode of the Chaos and Cookies Podcast. Today we are talking about cancer. We haven't really touched on this much in this podcast. And so I'm excited because everyone's been touched by that somehow, some way. Maybe you experienced it yourself, like my guest today. Her name is Michelle Rapkin, and we're going to be talking about her new book called Cancer Sucks, But You'll Get Through It. Trust me, I've been there. And it's a wonderful guide on how to approach cancer. Maybe it's with others. Maybe you might be on the receiving end of it when you're finding out. It's going to be, I think, a very deep dive into all aspects. And maybe you will get some good guidance from our guest today. And before I bring Michelle on, I'm going to give you a little background. And she is a three-time cancer survivor. She was first diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2000, and she intimately acquainted with the ins and outs of cancer. A graduate of Cornell University, Rapkin has spent over 30 years in the publishing industry, working on hundreds of books, including more than a dozen New York Times bestsellers. She's the editor, founder of Crossings Book Club. She currently lives in Ocean Grove, New Jersey, just steps from the beach, and that is also her happy place. Please welcome Michelle to the podcast. Hello.
Hi.
Were you just chasing your dog?
I was. He's outside now.
Oh, it's totally fine. And for the listeners, you can't see us, but you know, my dog just is pouncing around over here. So it is what it is. You know, our fur babies get us through. So thank you for being here. Before we jump in, I'm going to give you my icebreaker, which is, what is your favorite cookie and or cookie memory?
Oh my gosh. Okay, my favorite cookie, I just love really good chocolate chip cookies, like soft, hard, crusty, I just love chocolate chip cookies. But my favorite memory is making Christmas cookies with my mother every year from the time I was 7. We were using my grandmother's recipe from Russia, from the old country, and their rollouts. So we would spend days decorating them. And to this day, I make those cookies. So they've been made every year in my family for half a century or
more.
Wow.
And is there like a special name for them?
No, actually, they just look like rollout cutout cookies, but they taste very special.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Fresh oranges instead of sugar.
So do you make them with your 7-year-old grandchild?
Well, they live 2,000 miles away from me. So,
no.
Yeah.
When you so can, now, I guess.
I often make them myself, and I just take them to neighbors. I make up little plates, my friends. I just love doing it.
Aww.
And I keep plenty for myself, too.
Absolutely. Have to. Absolutely. Well, that sounds orange instead of sugar.
Mm-hmm. Fresh orange.
That's interesting. I've never heard that before. I've done maple syrup or you've honey and as the binder. Interesting. Well, I learn something new every day. Have to keep on theme with the name.
If you want it.
Hey, I'll take it. Hey, why not? You know, always looking to spice it up in the kitchen with the kids. My 7-year-old loves to bake or really help in the kitchen. My other two kind of, but he, like, if you're in the kitchen, he's always in there trying to like stir or crack eggs and do things. It's fun. So
nice.
He likes it better than I do. I don't like to cook. And so we are talking about cancer, and because it's such a robust topic, typically we'll kind of ease our way in, but we're just going to dive in because there's so much to touch on. And so you're a 3-time cancer survivor, and are you currently living with it now?
No, I've entered my 5th year of remission just last month.
Wow.
But I have, this is my 3rd remission.
So
Over
are
the
three
course
different
of
kinds
my life,
of cancer?
it's the same kind. It's called non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And there are several different types within that umbrella, but mine is the most garden variety common type.
Oh, I see. So it's like you've gotten different types over this time.
Well, no, I keep getting the same type over again.
Oh, interesting.
But there
And
are
do you
many, many non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is a large umbrella with lots of different lymphomas in it, under it.
they think they finally kicked it this time?
We're hoping so.
Hoping so. That's amazing. So you wrote a book and the book is not a memoir, so
Right.
it's more like a guide, right? Because when you get hit with that news, or whether that's yourself or maybe you find out about someone else, that's a lot to process, I think, for everyone, even the person delivering the news, right? So tell us a little more about this book and how it might be helpful.
Well, why don't I start by telling you that when I was first diagnosed, I wasn't told that I had cancer. I was told that I needed more tests. And I said, why? Because I thought I was perfectly fine. I had just had a routine physical. And I forced my doctor to tell me why I needed those tests. And he said, well, you might have nothing wrong with you, or you might have cancer. And we have to do more tests. So I spent 2 weeks trying to juggle the possibility of having cancer with the rest of my life. And the minute I left my doctor's office, I did what I often do. I'm sorry. I went straight to the bookstore because I'm in the book business. And I looked for a book that was going to tell me what now? Like, what should I do? Like, what should I get? How do I find an oncologist? Like, what should, questions should I ask? All kinds of things. So I went to the bookstore, cancer shelf full of half memoirs and half very intense medical books about specific kinds of cancer. But there was nothing that just said, you know what? I've been there. Here's what you do. Let's talk about this awful waiting period. Let's talk about telling our loved ones. Let's talk about finding an oncologist. So the book walks you all the way through from the very first minute you've heard you might have cancer through the end and beyond your treatment.
Kind of like a roadmap, just kind of step by
Absolutely.
step, because that's everybody's, they want a roadmap. Tell me what to
Yes.
do, where to go.
And I wrote this book really and truly. I wrote this book because I wanted it when I needed it and it didn't exist. It wasn't that it wasn't just in that bookstore, it wasn't anywhere for me to find. And so I normally, I'm pretty selfish. I've got my own agendas, but if there's anything in my life I've ever done, mostly just to help somebody else, it's really been writing this book.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people get like you can get information, right? I mean, you can Google on the internet, you can get all the science behind it, but to navigate and to know like step by step, and you've never done it before, it's very daunting. I created like a when I was doing Chaos and Cookies, when I first opened, it was more like I did a chaos control system where it was like a manual for my home, SOP, so to speak, right? And just so people could come in and like look and see what to do without having to like guess, right? And then it turned into an Instagram boot camp for those that didn't know how to use it. Like, I know I'm supposed to do this, but I don't know how. So giving them a roadmap of like, this is where you click and this is why you do it and this is how and this is what this is why you use it. Because there's not a lot of like how to like bare bones. And so this is what you're giving those that have cancer or maybe just got the news that someone has cancer. And I know that you said that you touched on that as well.
Yes, I have a section in the book for it's entitled Well-Meaning Family and Friends, and it is a section that is really meant for them to read after the owner has read it. And it includes everything from here's what you should say, here's what you should not say. Don't say, I'm here for you, and I just tell me what to do. I'll do anything. Because you know what? Your friend or your loved one, they have enough on their mind right now. They've got the biggest job of their life. They don't need to be thinking up errands for you to do so you can feel good about it. Just call your friend and say, I'm coming over to do a load of laundry or two loads of laundry and dry them and fold them. What time? Do you care? Give me a window. Or, you know, I'm sending you in the mail, not just a card, but this is a babysitting gift certificate. And if you want to just go out and get your nails done or just sit in the other room with the door closed, let me know. I'm here for 2 hours. And so it's very practical. It is in some ways, it's as much for people who have loved ones who have cancer, but it's primarily for the person with cancer.
Sure. And just like, I think that's very similar to like somewhat like a passing away. Like, don't like,
Yeah.
I have a really close, a friend of mine that lost her spouse, and they're like, we kind of talked about this before on the podcast where she's like, when they say like, what can I do? Let me know. Like, she's like, I couldn't even tell you because I don't know. So when you just do, or just say, I'm going to pick your kids up next week. Okay. You just need to just initiate it, right?
Just yes, exactly. Just do it. And if your friend doesn't need that done, then maybe there is something else they have in mind, but don't make it his or her job. You take on the responsibility.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And so with this book, when you get the diagnosis, I also had another guest that talked about advocating for yourself I don't know if you listened to that episode, but she's a weightlifting grandma. She's very
Oh, wow.
healthy, but she had been talking about how you should advocate for yourself, especially women, because we typically will go in and fit, not fib, but under, like kind of just damper down a little bit more of our symptoms, right? But for you advocated for yourself because you pressed him and said, well, I don't know what that means, more tests. Like, why? Give me a reason. Don't be, you know?
Exactly. Well, I'm so glad you brought this up. This to me is the lesson in here is for me, and I can tell you it has worked for me. It took me a while. You know, when you're first diagnosed, you're going to a million doctor's appointments. You're on their schedule, not yours. They put you in a little thin robe and stick you in a little room, and then you stay there until they come get you. Doesn't matter what else you have to do. And so your power, suddenly, you don't even have the power to leave the place and go pick up your kid. So, and you know, the medical establishment, which thank God for the medical establishment, but over the years, you know, we've gotten much better at advocating for ourselves. But a doctor is an authority figure, so it's hard. And I'm a pleaser. I'm not as much of a pleaser now as I used to be. So I want people to like me. I want to be cooperative. But you know, after oh, just a few weeks, I had this thought, which was, you know, I am feeling so powerless, but guess what? The minute I was diagnosed, I was also named CEO of a major health concern, mine. I could be a bad CEO or I can be a good CEO, but I'm the one who has the most to gain and the most to lose. Now, if I want to be a good CEO, I need to do my homework. And that means make sure that my sources of information are reliable and vetted, not just any place you see something written. Learn, ask questions, and hire a staff. I believe that choosing your oncologist is probably the most important active thing that you can do because that oncologist is going to be in your life for many, many years, even after you're all done with this. You have to go back for checkups. So this has got to be someone you're hiring. This person works for you. That doesn't mean that you're obnoxious or, abrasive, but remember, you're the boss. You're the one who's making the final decisions. And that first final decision, in some ways, is who am I hiring to head up my medical team? So it's a little bit about credentials, but for me, it was about is that when I talk with this person, are they in a hurry? Do they have to get somewhere? Am I like a bother? Because if that's the case, that's a red flag. Are they sort of pushing my questions aside or just not really answering them to the degree that I want to? Or are they really focusing on me and answering me and treating me like the grown-up that I am? And my rule of thumb finally became, in terms of choosing your oncologist, am I being treated the way I believe this oncologist would be treating their partner, spouse, or child, or parent? And if the answer is no, then interview another one. So I don't even know if I answered your question now,
Oh,
but.
yeah, no, that makes sense because you want to be in charge of your own destiny, right? So you need to advocate for yourself, which it, like you said, you want to go with the expert because that's what they do, and you want to like trust the process, but you also have instinct. You also have intuition, or if it's just not a good fit, you also have to have the guts to say, I'm going to go find somebody else.
Right.
Not
And
to
you don't
hurt
have
their
to love
feelings,
this person.
but
They're not going to be your friend. You're not looking for a friend, but you're looking for someone who you really respect and who respects you.
yeah, absolutely. I had several back surgeries, and my latest one, I went to lots of doctors, and some wanted to do, like, some gave me just medicine. One gave me, it's called Kadian. It's basically a pill form of morphine.
Wow.
And I did not know this.
Wow.
I'm allergic to morphine.
Oh my
So
gosh.
as soon as I took it, it came right back. And it was awful. And I just could not find a good doctor, but I was, younger, and I was just looking for answers. And I brought it with me, and I found a doctor that was actually my classmate's dad, who was like the lead surgeon for like the college. And so I went to see him. He ended up taking the medication from me, asked me who gave it, and then reported him to the board because he's like, this is highly addictive. Like, you should not, like, this, no one's got any business giving this to you. And I was like, well, I'm also allergic, so I didn't take any. And so, but advocating for yourself and just making sure that you bring all of your stuff and the history and what worked, what didn't, what you didn't like, or what maybe that doctor said, which is why you're looking, still looking, like,
Right.
to give them some background so they understand, so you don't set them up for failure. But I,
Exactly. Advocating for yourself is actually helping them. It is giving them information that they might not have. It's really trying to make their job and make the process go as smoothly as possible because you've been living with yourself for your whole life. You probably know a little more than any doctor about you.
yeah,
So
and not to be
share.
afraid of asking. Like for me, when I finally found my specialist, he said, well, we're going to need to go and cut through the front to get to your back because the last one didn't do it right. And this is why. And he gave me reasons. And I had just had three kids. I was done, but I had them naturally. When I say naturally, I still had epidural, but I didn't have a C-section. And I was like, of course, being a little vain and being like, I don't really want a scar on my stomach. I just had three kids. And I'm like, and he said, well, I'll do you a favor. I will look and just look at it and consider if it really is going to do you as well. And I was probably just had gotten to my car from his appointment, and he called me on my cell, and he said, I really am thinking about it. It's going to buy you an extra 5 years. I wouldn't feel right if I didn't. I know it sucks, but if, and I was like, I respect that. You considered my feelings. You considered it, but you're telling me no, and this is why. And you know what? I ended up did it. It's fine. Whatever. It's my kids think it's like, they play with it or whatever. It's fine. They do a good job. But he took the time to at least consider, and he's been the best thing ever. And I, you know, you
I'm
just can't
glad.
find those. And so when you find it, you keep it, and it's okay to keep moving. I went through seven doctors before I found them, mainly because they didn't have anything to help me with. And I was like, I
I
don't,
get it.
yeah.
That's great because, again, just like my oncologist, you've got a long-term relationship with this guy. So he needs to be the guy that you want and you trust.
And then he broke up with me. He's like, you don't have to come anymore
No.
until you, no, he's like, you're good. You don't have to unless you have a
Congratulations.
problem. I'm like, I don't know what to do here. I've had been
Oh.
lying to you for so long and you're telling me, he's like, well, I mean, you can come see me, but you don't need to.
Honestly, I have a chat. The last chapter of my book is about saying goodbye to chemo. It's like, whoa, when I had my last chemo session, it's like, all right, I'm happy that I'm going to have my last chemo session, but maybe not. Like, it was sort of comforting knowing that there are all those chemo drops of poison going through my body, killing all those cancer cells. Like, maybe I'm going to miss it. It's
It's changed.
we yeah, it's changed.
Especially when it's something that's been keeping you going or like it's been supporting your health. And then you're
Right.
like, oh, you don't have to do it anymore. You're like, wait, why? It's almost like getting off of a medication. Like, well,
Well,
you
yeah. Will I still
sure?
be happy? Yeah. Will I feel well?
Right. Like, are you sure I don't need it? Like, you're sure? So, I mean, I can understand also with cancer, and I can't speak to it because I've not had it, but like, when you get the diag, how is it when you get the diagnosis, you go through it, you go into remission, but then it like comes back? Because there's always probably that, and I'm sure maybe they gave you odds, but how does that happen for you when you get another diagnosis again?
Well, so I went into remission. This was in the year 2001, and I stayed in remission for 15 years.
Wow.
And by that time, my husband had died. I had moved from New York City to Ocean Grove. My life, I mean, 15 years, I had some symptoms, and again, they were not symptoms of lymphoma. They were just weird symptoms. And I went to a new doctor. And he could not figure out what was wrong with me. And he kept taking tests and he couldn't figure it out. And finally, like a long time, I mean, yeah, a long time within the couple of days after this all started, I said to him, you know what? I did have cancer 15 years ago. I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, but I've been good for 15 years. So, they tell you 7 years is a cure or whatever, which turns out sometimes it is, sometimes not. Mostly it is. But an hour later, I was diagnosed with a recurrence of the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma that I had had 15 years earlier. So
Were they different symptoms this time around than the first time?
I never had symptoms the first time.
Oh.
My doctor just found this little ulceration when he was doing a routine colonoscopy for me. And he didn't like the way it looked, so he took a little tissue. I mean, I felt fine. And the second time, my symptoms were, it was when I would try to go to sleep, I usually sleep on my side, and I would feel this strange sort of pulling sensation inside of me, and it didn't get better; it got worse. Finally, it got to the point where it took me half an hour to find a position where I could fall asleep. It wasn't pain; it was just pulling.
Comfortable.
And finally, I just thought I have to go to the doctor. And it was a tumor in another place completely of non-Hodgkin's, same lymphoma. So I had chemo again and went into remission. And I would have scans every 3 months. And so I figured, well, I've got 15 more years before I have to even raise an eyebrow. But 9 months later, after my 9 month scan, it was back again. So that was really rough for me, mentally and emotionally, because there were no chemos left to have to take. So there were other measures that they were going to need to take, and it wasn't looking great, but I'll spare you all the details. But suffice it to say that I had treatment two different treatments for 6 months with two amazing doctors, my oncologist and the University of Pennsylvania Oncology Department, and went into remission. Well, it was almost a year, but at the end of the year, I went back into remission, and now that's been 4 solid years, and I'm in my fifth.
Wow. And that's incredible. But I also do want to back up because when you were feeling the symptoms, is there somewhere in the book that will tell you or guide you on what kind of doctor you should see? Because like when you're feeling kind of like in weird, like my shoulder hurts, I'm going to go to an ortho, like a shoulder guy, right? You're not going to go to a GP. Like, do you go to a gynecologist for like sides? Do you go, where do you go? Do you go, like, where do you start? What kind of doctor do you go to?
Well, honestly, it's sort of what you said. If you feel the normal symptoms for lymphoma are swollen glands. You know how your kids get swollen glands, you can feel them. That is the normal and really the only big symptom of lymphoma that is, pretty certain. So, usually either you go to a gastroenterologist if you're having gastro problems or, a specialist if you have a special issue. But honestly, it's your GP, it's your primary physician's job to, he doesn't have to figure out what's wrong for you, but his job is to get you to the place and the person who will figure it out for you. So, and if your primary physician drops the ball, then you need a new primary physician.
Couldn't it show up in blood work as well with your blood count and your white cell? No, it won't always do that.
No, it's a very, there are certain cancers that don't show up as easily as others. And this is one that unless you have the swollen glands, which I never did, even the third time I didn't, it's hard to detect it, but it's doable.
Yeah, my grandmother had lymphoma. I don't know what kind. I was still like younger, but I believe that's what kind she had, but I'm not really sure because she was in New York and we were in Texas. I was like 15, 16. I mean, I was, but just the symptoms, like don't ignore them. But as moms, we typically will just kind of push them aside because we'll take our kids to the doctor real quick. But when something's wrong with us, and again, with the guests I had before, it's almost like we don't want to know.
Well, that's true. I
Right.
mean, I put it off,
How
whenever
inconvenient.
when
I've
I had
got
a
a family.
feeling.
I got this. I don't have time. Like, if I did have something serious, who's gonna? Oh, I gotta just, I'll get to it when I get to it.
Yeah, I know. Well, that really is often human nature, particularly for parents, and I think particularly for women. We put other people's needs in front of our own, but it's a good thing to, listen, put it off for a little while, but don't put it off too long.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, you've got a bunch of helpful tips in the book, and one of them is you should have your teeth cleaned before you start treatment. Why? Why?
Well, I didn't know that the first time round or the second time round. One of the good things about writing this book after 3 times with cancer is I have learned a lot, and I've learned a lot from other cancer survivors. So I learned I needed to go to the dentist, and I had a really bad toothache. And as it happened, I was meeting with my oncologist right after they had diagnosed it, and I must have held my cheek or something. And he said, "What's wrong?" And when I told him, he said, "Well, you've got to get that fixed. You've got to go to the dentist now before you start chemo, because once you start chemotherapy, it is absolutely imperative not to get a cold or the flu or the sniffles, because if that happens, you will have to stop the chemotherapy until you're better." So there are lots and lots of tips for keeping germs away. But what they neglect to tell you is that if you get your teeth cleaned or a checkup, You're going to have them probing. The dentist's going to probe, and you are going to bleed sooner or later. There's going to be a little blood coming from your gums, which is why you cannot go to the dentist once you've started chemo. But your oncologist, he's focusing on other things, he or she. She's not going to say to you, "Oh, by the way, go to the dentist and get a good cleaning." And P.S., you can't go back to the dentist until you're done with chemo, which for me was often 6 months.
Because it's
So,
bacteria entering your body.
correct.
Because they used to make, so when I've got pins and rods and all that. So when I would go to the dentist, they would always ask, "Did you premedicate before you came?" I was like, "Premedicate? What are you talking about? No one told me I needed to." They were like, "You're going to have to come back." And they wrote me a prescription for an antibiotic. And I had to take the antibiotic a couple of days leading up to a cleaning because of the bacteria that could potentially go and find its way to the metal, infect it from the inside. Da, 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 right. So it all comes. And so then they said after a while, it's like, "Oh, you don't need to premedicate anymore because it's." So I'm like, I don't even know why there would be rules at the beginning versus the end, but everything leads down for teeth cleaning. So I thought that was interesting.
Yes.
And so with that being said, there's also a question that says, like, why shouldn't you spend more than $200 on a wig?
Well, that came from my own experience too. So I was terrified of losing my hair and knew I was going to. And you know something I learned that I used to think for people who lost their hair, like, what are you worried about? It's going to grow back. Like, you're fighting cancer.
Say, yeah, right.
But what here's what I learned from experience. The reason it's so traumatic, and it really is partly because you can't, not that you can't forget that you have cancer. You walk past a mirror in your house and there's this bald person walking by the mirror. You go to bed, but you're freezing because 30% of the heat in your body is lost through the head, so you have to put on a cap. I mean, it's endless. And then you're walking down the street with your scarf or your wig or your baseball cap. But guess what? Total strangers sometimes will see you and they go, and they immediately know that you have cancer. Like, whoa, wait a minute. This is very personal. I'm not sure I want you to know. So it is traumatic. Anyway, I was told to get the best wig I possibly could. And in New York City, there's this one wig place. So I went and they shaved my head, which is, I recommend getting your head shaved shortly before you know that the hair is going to fall out. And your oncologist can tell you almost exactly when it's going to fall out. And because it's less traumatic than literally pulling hair out of your head. And so I bought a human hair wig, the best, and it was over $1,000 20 years ago, and was, you know, it looked beautiful. But here's what happened. It was hot, it was itchy, there was so much hair there that I couldn't really keep it clean. I couldn't really do it up once I did wash it, and it was itchy. I was so uncomfortable. And after many, many months of being bald, I was in a little strip mall and there was a little wig store there. And I just walked in because, oh God. In fact, by this time I'd stopped wearing my wig and I was wearing scarves or baseball caps, but I was also going into work every day. So, you know, I sort of needed a wig. And I just bought this short little synthetic wig for $150. And I just thought, I have nothing to lose here. And guess what? Synthetic hair washes up perfectly. It dries really quickly. But because it was so much shorter than my long hair wig, it weighed less. I learned not at the fancy store, but at the other store, the cheap store, they told me, well, of course your head's itching. You need to wear a nylon cap over your head and then put the wig on and that'll keep it from itching. Duh, my fancy people never told me that.
Yeah,
So,
I think that's a
yeah.
pretty important thing.
So, you know, if you want to buy the more expensive wig later on, great, but start out with the cheap one and save yourself some money.
Absolutely. I think I mean
I'm
you see
listening.
the stories of big people shaving their head or people doing it in like camaraderie. But I guess when you see others, it's like, oh, who cares? But it's not your personal body. And I think you also lose it like on your arms, so you're more cold
Everywhere.
everywhere, right?
Everywhere. In fact, just one more hint. So I got a call from a friend who had been through a terrible cancer and came out the other end. She's still great 20 years later, and she's very chop chop. And so no like great sympathy. It was like, Michelle, you're gonna lose your hair in about a week, right? Yep. Well, not long after that, your nose is going to start running uncontrollably, and you are going to think that you're getting a cold or the flu, and you're going to be terrified because you'll have to stop chemo. But guess what? Your oncologist doesn't even realize this for reasons we discussed earlier. But you know what? When you lose your hair, you lose all of your hair, including your nose hair, which filters drips from sinus that we all have all the time. So don't worry, don't go to the doctor, just have a tissue nearby.
That makes sense. You don't even think about that, actually.
Right.
Makes complete sense though, because it's everywhere, right? In and out. And so if you could leave one thought with the listeners who've recently been diagnosed with cancer and they're hearing this now, like what would that be?
Honestly, it would be for the person who has been diagnosed, make sure that you remember that you are hiring your medical staff and you have to be comfortable with them. And be proactive, be the CEO of your health. And also, I'll tell you what I used to tell myself that helped me so much. And, I was bald. I was green from chemicals in me. I had gained 30 pounds because a doctor forgot to tell me that the chemo would put me in menopause. So I was like drop shipped into the land of menopause along with it. And I thought, you know what? One year from now, I don't know where I'll be. I don't know what I'll be doing, but I know that this will be behind me. One year, this will be behind me. And you know something? That was very helpful because that was very, very helpful because I just focused on that day, that hour. Don't think too far. Live your life 1 hour at a time. If it's just one breath at a time, do that.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. That's a really great tip, I think. What about the one thing that you could leave if you just got news that someone has cancer?
If you've gotten news that someone has cancer, don't be shy. Give them time, but be in touch with them. Send them a text if nothing else. You don't even have to use the word cancer. I hear you're going through something very rough. Just want you to know I'm thinking of you. I was shocked at the number of friends or acquaintances who just were there for me the whole time. And I had some very long, long stretches. But I was also surprised at old friends and people who I thought would be with me through everything. And they sort of disappeared. And what I learned later was that for most of them, they didn't know what to say. They were afraid that they'd wake me up. They were afraid of a million different things. And it's like, just don't leave. Don't go away. Just let them know you're there.
Absolutely, because that's the worst, because people will pull away and then it feels very lonely when they mean well, but it doesn't feel that way, right?
Yes, for sure.
And so where can we find this book? Do you have another one or a follow-up, anything that you're working on, or are you just still spreading the word of just how to navigate it?
Well, right now I'm spreading the word of how to navigate it. It's just out. It's called Cancer Sucks, but you'll get through it. Trust me, I've been there. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Barnes and Noble, hopefully in your bookstore, but it's very available. And actually, this summer, I will be at the beach, and then maybe I'll think about another book after that. But honestly, I don't really think I'll write another book. This book is enough for me to write.
Amazing. And thank you so much for sharing your story. And wow, three times. That's, I mean, that's incredible. Hopefully that's the last of it. And
Yes, I hope so.
maybe you could write a book about life in remission and how to
There you
approach
go.
remission.
I like that.
I don't know. I mean,
Okay.
hey, because then,
Thank you,
you get
Heather.
the cancer and then it's like, now what?
Yeah, well, that's true. You're absolutely right. All
You
right,
know?
my next project.
All right. Well, hey, I let me
Thank
know
you
and you come
for
back
this,
and talk.
your full service
Seems like you're
podcaster.
doing an amazing job living the beach and doing your thing. And I really appreciate you being here and thank you for sharing your story with us and the listeners. Cancer is just one of those things. It's like the most common thing that binds, I think, most bonds most of us. And so we haven't talked about it before. And I thank you for being one of the first ones. And
Thank you for inviting me and for such a wonderful conversation.
oh, you're so welcome. And thank you for being here. You're welcome anytime. And my listeners can find anything about the book, anything about Michelle in the show notes. All the links will be there. So you can grab yourself a copy, reach out to Michelle if you have like a personal question, if you
I'm
need
on Facebook,
Facebook
Michelle Rapkin. Yep. And
and
Instagram.
Instagram. See? And so you can reach out, ask your questions. If you need help connecting, please reach out to me on my social media and website, and we will connect to you guys. And thank you for listening to another episode of the Chaos and Cookies podcast. And we will catch you on the next one. And thank you so much, Michelle, for being here.
Thank you so much, Heather. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Chaos and Cookies podcast. If you want more goodies and friends to share them with, follow the crumbs to the Facebook group or visit the Chaos and Cookies website to grab my sweet secrets on how to calm your cookies. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. See y'all next week for another episode of Chaos and Cookies.